What's up, Dream Warriors? Welcome back to another episode of a podcast on Elm Street. I'm Mark.
And I'm Brooke.
And you're fixing your mic. Is
Yeah.
it wonky on you?
Yeah. We're good.
All right. We're coming back with part two of our villain face-off, our first one of 2024, and our first one in a very long time.
Yep.
But this is your pick of M. From 1931.
Yeah. Kind of random. Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling of what the face off, how the outcome is gonna be, but
yeah.
still gonna be a fun movie to talk about.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of a different vibe than No Country for Old Men, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, but before we talk about this movie, we will kick off our news and boo. Almost reversed it again. All right, what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking a. I'm going to butcher this, but Tuque Doré. It's a
Okay.
pale ale. And yeah.
I like the can. It's like an ugly Christmas sweater, kind of.
Yeah. The
And
brewery is
knitted.
called Tuque de Brew.
French as fuck.
Yeah.
Nice.
What about you?
I'm drinking Flying Monkeys. The Mutants Are Revolting.
Nice.
I want to know how your beer tastes.
Good.
Good.
Yeah, this brewery is in Embrun, which is pretty close to where I'm at.
Did they just have it at the beer store, or did you?
It had an LCBO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. I know that you've watched movies this week.
I did.
So let's talk about that.
All right. Well, I guess I'll bring in my letterbox because I've watched
Been a
enough
minute.
for, I know, my first day of watching multiple movies in one day. So,
Nice.
yeah. So watched Thanksgiving, the new one from last year. Really liked it. This is definitely going to be a yearly watch for me because I mean, there isn't that many Thanksgiving horror movies that are actually good.
True.
Yeah. Watched Dune again. I was supposed to go watch Dune on Thursday, but plans changed, didn't get to. So, me and Bettina watched The Holdovers, which it's pretty much a Christmas movie, but glad I finally watched it. Really fucking good. It made into my top 10 of last year. I think
Nice.
it's number 9, I think, or 8 now.
Okay.
Really good. I highly recommend it. It is on Prime Video, I think.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I saw it on there today.
Yeah. And then I was browsing Criterion Channel, and they just released a Razzie Award section, which has some questionable movies, some movies that I didn't think were that bad, but it has like Tom Cruise's Cocktail on there.
Yeah.
Has Jiggly, that J-Lo movie.
Gigli, not Jiggly.
Oh. I
It's not her
don't
ass, man.
know. Yeah, they have Freddy Got Fingered on there, which I told you about.
I think that's hilarious that that's on
Yeah.
Criterion.
And they have Wicker Man, which has been on my list. Never seen it. I pretty much watch it because I wanted to see the bee scene, but was disappointed because it's not in this cut.
Oh no,
The
really?
only place you can see it is on the DVD, which has the cut scenes on it, because I guess that he filmed it as like a 18 plus, but then changed it to 14 plus or something like that. So
Okay. And this is the Nicolas Cage for
this
anyone.
is, yeah, the Nicolas Cage Wicker Man. It's not good. Yeah, he punches like four women in the face. It's pretty funny. And then another first watch, I watched Raging Bull for the first time.
Great movie.
Really good movie. I did kind of like get taken out of it because like Vicky, the girl that he like is in love with, is like 15 years old at the time that they meet.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's just kind of weird. Like, I wish they would have said that she was like, I don't know, like 17 or 18 would have made it a bit better, but yeah. But
De Niro had some questionable movies like that earlier on in his career, like Taxi Driver,
Oh
which
yeah.
Natalie Portman was like, or the Jodie Foster was in that
Yeah,
one.
Jodie Foster, yeah.
Yeah, she was like, what, 14, I think.
But yeah, good movie. And yeah.
Nice.
We also watched the first episode of the new show Shogun
Oh,
on
yeah.
Disney Plus.
I had a feeling you would have watched some of that at least.
Really good. First episode was like an hour and 10, 15 minutes. There's two episodes there right now. I didn't get to watch the second one, but man, it's fantastic. It looks so good. It's crazy.
It's getting a lot of credit for sure. I just realized I don't have my letterbox up. Just give me one sec.
And we just started tonight, the first episode of Ted, the TV series.
Oh, nice.
That's fucking hilarious on
I've heard it's good. All right, I'm trying to avoid your score for M. Okay. All right. Here. All right. We watched Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Nice.
Hunter wanted to watch it, so we threw it on. And then that same day, we watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I also watched Thanksgiving.
Oh, nice.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. Yeah, I could definitely see it being a yearly watch for me as well. Just kind of fits in nicely with, well, our Thanksgiving's in October, so it might fit into like an October watch every year. And then tonight I watched Lionheart, which is a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. And man, it is so good. It's like, I don't know, I think it's like peak Van Damme. I thought he did a really good job with it. Some of the fights were awesome. It was like his typical like underground fighting ring style movie, but I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good action movie. Sarah and I started watching that reality show that came out on Netflix called The Trust. Watched one episode of that. It's pretty good. It's decent.
Nice.
And yeah, that's pretty much all I've been really watching. As for the news, I really didn't think there was going to be much, but then I went online and I remembered that there's a few things that came out this week. There is going to be a Paranormal Activity video game
Oh, really?
releasing in 2026. And it has advanced haunt system for maximum terror. So what I'm reading is where is it here in the article? So the game will feature an advanced haunt system, which will dynamically alter the types and intensity of scares players will encounter based on their actions. I think that's pretty cool. So like different stuff that you do is gonna determine what happens throughout the movie
Cool.
or game, I mean. All right, so we got our first look of Bill Skarsgård as Eric Draven in The Crow. Give me your thoughts.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it will be a good movie, but I think just leave the crow alone. Like, just the legacy it had and the unfortunate events that came from it. Like, that's all the guy had, right? Well, not all he had, but that was his most iconic role. He died in the movie, making the movie. Just, I don't know, I feel like out of respect, just leave it. But I don't know. He looks weird. I saw some like meme. He was like Bill Skarsgård as Jared Leto the Joker as so and so of this character. It was funny.
It's pretty accurate, I think. Yeah, it's a weird look, I guess. It's a very modernized, I don't know, SoundCloud fucking rapper kind of look. The face tats, the mullet haircut. I don't know. We'll see how it is. I mean, you and I both love Skarsgård, so I think he'll be good in the role, but I don't know, the look of him's kind of weird. But he's fucking shredded, man.
He is,
Like
yeah.
ripped. And lastly, we got The official trailer for Strangers Chapter One this week.
Okay.
I haven't watched the trailer yet. I don't know if I'm
Me
going to
either.
watch the trailer because The Strangers is like a one of my favorite movies. And I don't know. I think I want to go into this blind. I don't want to have any sort of expectations going into it. I think it's kind of, I don't want to say weird, but like kind of weird that they're doing this as a trilogy. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but I'm going to go in with like zero expectations and just hopefully enjoy it. All right. Normally we have 2 weeks before episodes, but this time we only have one. So do we have any good 4K releases?
There was actually. So yeah, we got Wonka
That
on.
steelbook is sick.
That is a sick steelbook, yeah. Little Darlings, don't know what that is, but it's a sick cover. I like it. The Horrible Dr. Hitchcock and Southern Comfort. Never heard of those movies, but is that to Al Pacino?
No, but he looks like
Kind of
someone.
looks like him.
Yeah.
Contagion on 4K. Gunfight at the OK Corral. Fear and Desire. Never heard of those movies,
Kubrick.
but Kubrick. Migration, which you saw.
Migration is still in the Brockville Theater. I can't believe it. Like, it's the longest running movie in that theater
Yeah.
ever.
Oh man. We got Creepshow on Steelbook.
Sick.
Dragonheart, The Magnificent Seven from 1960.
Nice.
Platoon on Steelbook and The Roaring Twenties. Guessing it's a some collection of some sort.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sweet. Pretty busy week for releases.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you don't have anything else, we can cue that theme music and dive into this movie. Right, like we said in the intro this week, we are talking about M from 1931. This is officially our oldest ever movie that we've recorded on this podcast, and it'll probably be tough to beat because there's not a lot of horror movies prior to this. But I'm sure we can find some at some point.
Yeah, I think HMC did one, didn't they?
Yeah, the there's one that's a carriage. I can't remember
Yeah.
what it's called. But anyways, synopsis. When the police in a German city are unable to catch a child murderer, other criminals join in the manhunt.
Yep.
Pretty straightforward. This movie is directed by Fritz Lang, who did Metropolis, which is a movie that I've always wanted to watch.
Yeah.
The Woman in the Window, Scarlet Street, and Contempt. The cast is like a fully German cast. Leading it off is Peter Lorre, who plays Hans Beckert. He was in Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon, The Raven, Around the World in 80 Days, and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yeah, some trivia on him I saw is that before this role, he was mostly a comedic actor.
And after doing this movie with Fritz Lang, he refused to do any future movies with him too, because apparently Fritz was like basically Kubrick before Kubrick was him.
Yeah, I saw some little trivia thing about how terrible he was
Oh
to the actors in this movie.
yeah. The next three actors I have, I didn't write down any movies because they were all just German releases and I didn't recognize any of them. But next is Ellen Widman or Wideman. She played Frau Beckman. Inga Landgut played Elsie Beckman, and Otto Wernick played Inspector Lohmann. I don't have any honorable mentions.
Yeah, no, me either.
I assumed you didn't either.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess we can just jump right into this.
Alrighty. Yeah, it's something that you I think if not sure if you mentioned last podcast or it was over Messenger, but you're saying how cool movie posters were from this time period. They just have that, like, I don't know, colorful, like, look. Like, it's different colorful, right?
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's so hard to describe, but it's like it's almost like they all have like a yellow background or like a bright background, and like something like right in the forefront that always catches your eye, except for this one. This one's a pretty dark cover, but it's still really cool.
And like this movie, like watching this movie, like throughout the movie, just made me think of so many other movies that we've watched. And like for any horror trope that you think of from like thrillers or anything like that, like this movie has it. So I can see why this movie is such a huge influence to a lot of other movies. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of like shadow shots, and there was one scene that I thought was really cool where like you're looking inside a window, and it's like a, I don't know, like a, there's like nine panes of glass, let's just say, and it like zooms in through one of the panes, and it was just, I don't know, it was a really cool shot, and you see that a lot in horror movies, and I thought it was really neat to see it being done in 1931. Just, yeah.
So the beginning of the movie, we get a little Freddy Krueger poem going. All these kids are playing a circle of game, and the song that they sing is "Just You Wait, It Won't Be Long. The Man in Black Will Soon Be Here. With his cleaver's blade so true, he'll make mincemeat out of you." I thought it was awesome.
Pretty gruesome.
It is, man. Like,
And they're playing it like "Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe." It's a game like that. But yeah, that's very reminiscent of Nightmare on Elm Street.
It's crazy to think because, like, this is one of the first talkie movies, and like movies like just pretty much came out within the last, 20 years, 10 years, right?
Yeah. They started like gaining popularity, yeah.
It's just crazy to me. But yeah, there's the children are playing outside, the mothers are doing laundry, doing all that, and one of the mothers, was kind of worried, and the main mother, I think, wrote her name
That
down
was
here.
Frau Beckman.
She's like kind of worried, and then the other mother is like, "Well, as long as we can hear them singing, then we know they're okay." And should have brought the kids in, and but she's cooking up dinner. School ends, which kind of seemed very early. It's like 12 o'clock.
Yeah, well, I mean, like even when we were kids in kindergarten, like our days were only half days.
Oh, I guess so.
I think it was something like that.
So public school gets out, all the kids are out, and we meet Elsie. She's walking home by herself, and she is playing with the ball, and she stops at this sign, and you see a man's shadow on the wanted poster, which I thought was really cool
Yeah, I
as
love this
well.
shot.
The man's talking to her. You don't see who it is, you see a shadow, and she goes along with him. There's all these children missing. The man's talking to her. He's buying her balloons from a blind man. And these balloons were creepy as fuck. Like, what the hell?
Yeah,
Oh,
they were.
man. The like balloon was a body that had like legs, but the legs weren't like blown up, and then had another balloon head and just like this creepy sketch of the face on the balloon. Very creepy, man. But yeah, this
And
blind man. Oh, go ahead.
oh no, you go.
I was gonna say the blind man is selling balloons, and he comes into the movie later. Our murderer, he whistles this song, which I thought this song came out after this movie, but apparently not.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna bring up, was that that our murderer whistles every time he's about to kill, or like every time he gets like the thought in his mind that he's gonna kill somebody or a child, he starts whistling this tune.
Which is like, go ahead, sorry.
I was gonna say you can really see him like struggling with it throughout the movie during certain parts.
And this is another horror trope that like you see in these psychological thriller movies, and like the way that people act, like, it just blows my mind that all this is in this movie,
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's one thing that's really interesting about this movie too, is because like there's not a lot of sound in it. Like there's dialogue and spoken dialogue throughout it, but like anytime where like it's a car driving by or something like that, like there's a lot of silent parts in this movie and there's like no music in it. Like now in horror movies, when something's about to happen, they play music. And this movie doesn't have a musical track. Our music is his whistling, which I thought was really cool, like in a really neat way to do it.
I also don't need talking through the whole movie. Like, there's a few scenes where it says complete silence, like when they're looking for the murderer, and like says dark at night, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, they're just out in the town trying to find this guy, and there's no sound at all, so they're trying to listen to hear him and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going back to the old silent film era where this movie just came out of. Like, I think this is Fritz Lang's first talkie movie. So it's almost like a slow transition period where you're still getting pieces of that silent film era and also pieces of the spoken dialogue where like the silence is telling a story in itself.
So Frau, she's still cooking along, and she keeps looking at the clock because it's like an hour's gone by, an hour and a half. Elsie still's in here. A really creepy shot, and another shot where there's no sound. It just cuts from Frau to some like grassy area. You just see the ball bounce. Then it cuts to another shot. You see the balloon go up in the air, and then just cuts back to her mom, and like no sound. It's just like it gives you chills because you know what happened. Like, Elsie got murdered.
Yeah, and like this scene kind of pissed me off a little bit. I mean, like I know it's a different time period, but like if my kids expected to be home like 12:30 at the latest and it's now 1:30, I'm not going to be cooking supper anymore. Like, I'm going to be going out trying to find my fucking kid.
And like whenever the other kids come home from school and she asks them, oh, did Elsie come with you? And they're like, no, she didn't come with us. And then she just goes back inside. It's like, take your stuff off the stove, go look for your kid. And then like, another hour later, she's opening the door, yelling down the stairs, and you see like the shot of going down all the stairs, and she's yelling, Elsie, and then like opens the windows, yelling outside for her. But it's like, man, just go look for her.
And like the mailman drops off mail and he says he hasn't seen her yet. So it's like you know that she's not in the close vicinity of your apartment building.
And the next scene, there's someone selling papers, and there is a letter that was published in the newspaper. And this really reminded me of Zodiac and the Zodiac Killer. And because you see somebody writing the letter to the press, he's basically saying he wrote letters to the police and they did nothing. And that's exactly like how the Zodiac Killer was, right? He was writing to the press and these puzzles, and like that just blew my mind that that is happening in this movie.
Yeah, because the Zodiac Killer was after this, right? So like it makes you think like shit, maybe he watched M one too many times.
There's a bunch of cops, and I think they're cops in this scene. But there's like there have been eight victims so far. They got some pretty sick steins and wild ass smoking pipes in this
Dude,
movie.
the one guy's contraption, I think it was like the shape of a pipe, but also like a French horn. Like it had like a weird curl type in it. And he stuck a fucking cigar in the end of it. And he's just smoking that. I'm like, holy shit. There's so much tobacco being smoked in this movie, though.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. So all the cops and investigators are, talking about how anybody can be a murderer. Like they don't know who it is. It could be your neighbor, and they basically are saying that, we'll just arrest anybody, basically, right? And that's what they're doing pretty much, right? Like they go into the all the underground things after that, but the scene also with Hans, who is our killer, when we first see him looking in the mirror and he's doing that thing with his face, like Joker vibe. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like he's like doing like the pretending to smile thing, and like it's crazy how far ahead of its time this movie was.
Yeah, because he's like unable to show happiness, I think. And like the only time he's happy is whenever he's killing. And like that kind of comes out in his monologue at the end of the movie, where like he's got so much shit going on in his head, and the only way that he can get rid of all that talking and all that fucking evil that's going on in his head is to just go out and do an evil thing. Like this guy doesn't know happiness.
No. And he doesn't even remember doing it, right? So, yeah.
And like during this scene too, like we see everybody's like skeptical of everybody at this point. Like any man that's walking down the street, if they even like glance at a child, like people are
It's crazy.
keeping a wary eye on them. And like you see a guy and he's taking his daughter to school, and like everybody's keeping an eye on him, and just like everybody's skeptical of everybody at this point.
They're investigating one of the scenes. They find a candy wrapper, they find some other stuff, and they are basically gonna be like, okay, they trace a line around the crime scene. They're gonna search these areas. You don't find out how the children died, but they don't really tell you, but the cops don't want to talk about it, so it must be pretty brutal, right? Also, I feel like this is the first montage in film history.
It's possible.
I loved it, man. Like, they're talking and they get like the dog, they get dogs come and search, they can't find them. They search homeless shelters for the guy, and they can't find who this guy is. There's no really evidence, right? The cops, they raid an underground bar where all these like kind of criminals are, and I love that all the people in there, they call Lock, wasn't it Lockman or
Loman.
Loman, Tubby.
Yeah.
So they basically keep everyone in this underground bar, and they're like, okay, everyone needs to have their papers, like basically their birth certificate and ID. And if you don't have it, then you're being taken to the precinct. So, people bring up, they don't have a shelter or ID, go to the precinct. And then I love like the one guy, he's like this rich guy and stuff like that, gives him the stuff, he like checks out, and then he's leaving, and then Loman grabs a paper out of him and newspaper that has like a break-in for a fancy clothing store, and then Loman's like, oh, I solved that case, you broke into that place. He's like, you're going to the precinct. Then they find a bag with like these knives and stuff in it, and the transitions in this movie blew my mind
Some of them, yeah.
of like the editing they did. Like they find this in the bar, and then they take it and put it on a table, and then it's the evidence locker at the police station. I was like, damn, that's really cool that, like, I don't know, man, it's crazy.
Yeah, they did a lot with what they had back then.
So now we meet our four main leaders of the criminal world. I literally know one of them. It's the They call them, not Decoder,
Safe Breaker, Safe Cracker, Safe.
Safecracker or something like that. Yeah, he's like the kind of head of each division, and they're basically coming to the conclusion that they can't do any of their crimes because there's too many cops and everyone's on edge, with what's going on. And then he brought up earlier too, but the scene, there's like just an old man talking to a little girl, and then like these girls see him talking to her, and then like this big ass guy comes out and they point to him and he goes up to him, and like everyone just thinks that this old man is the killer because he's talking to the girl, and there's people like on the on a bus, and then yeah, just chaos in this German town.
Yeah. And like the only reason why he was talking to her is because she stopped him to ask what time it was. And like this guy's just getting crucified in the streets now because of it.
It really reminded me of too that movie I just watched last year with Mads Mikkelsen, The Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Reminded me of that too. So the criminals are basically deciding that they need to step up and find this child murderer because he isn't a real criminal and he's kind of taken away from all of the stuff that they can do.
And is it them that offer? No, I think it's the police that have a 10,000 marks reward.
But
And they're
then
all saying
they.
like,
Oh, go
yeah, they're
ahead.
all saying like it's not high enough. Like they need to make it more worth people's time, basically.
I think they tell their workers that if you find Hans or the killer, then you get 15,000, or no, not 15,000, like 1,500 or something like that.
No, I think it was 15,000.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because we see this scene where it's almost like whenever you join the military, you can think of what it's called. But anyways, like all the criminals are like lining up and they're talking to the guys at the table and they have like a grid of the city. And they're like, okay, you're gonna take every corner from like section 1 to section 88. And like they write their names down on the sheet of paper and like where they're supposed to look. And the next guy comes up and like he's from like 89 to like 156 or something like that. So like everybody has every corner of the city has people on it now to keep an eye out.
Because they're using the organization of the beggars to find him.
Yeah,
So
because they want to use people that like nobody's gonna bat an eye at and like people aren't going to wonder why these people are in the streets, kind of thing.
just very smart too, right?
Yeah.
And I like the scene too whenever we had the four leaders talking about the plans, and then like it cut to the policemen, and like the policeman will like say a sentence and then they'll like stop, and then the criminals will like continue that sentence. Like another thing that just kind of blew my mind that we did.
Yeah, it was really cool.
So yeah, it's been 8 months now since all these murders have started happening. The criminals, they want to write to the cops saying that this guy isn't a part of them, but the main leader, the code breaker or whatever, he doesn't want to get the cops involved at all. You find out that the cops figured out that the letter was written on an old wooden table and used a red pencil. So they're basically going to people's houses where it was former patients at like hospitals, insane asylums, all this stuff. So they have like a list of, I don't know, 50 or 60 people. And one of the cops, he ends up going to Hans's house, which I believe he just like rents a room from this girl who like is basically deaf. She can't hear anything. And so this cop is in there. He finds like a wooden table, but doesn't find any markings on it. Doesn't find any red pencil, but he does find in the trash can a letter, and then some cigarettes, a specific brand of cigarettes. So while he's doing that, Hans is out prowling the streets. And this scene with him was creepy as hell, man. When he's like looking at like the knives in the window, and then the girl comes into the frame of like the mirror in where he's looking, and immediately you see like how he gets when he needs to kill. He sees the girl and he like gets his body language changes.
He gets all like hunched over and like he's like kind of looking over his shoulder, which is like the iconic scene from this movie is like him looking over his shoulder and his eyes are like bugging out of his head.
Yeah.
And yeah, like it's almost like he not like starts convulsing, but it's like he's very twitchy and like needs to get this. It's almost like needs to get a fix almost if he's a
Yeah.
drug addict.
So he starts doing his creepy ass whistling of that song and is following her down the street, and then she runs into her mom, and it's like he's having sex and he's like not able to finish because he's still whistling and is like getting worked up, and he has to go to a cafe, and he's like, okay, I get a coffee, and he's like, no, I want a whiskey, or no, I want a cognac, and takes a couple of shots of cognac, has a cigarette, and then leaves immediately, and that kind of, I don't know, gets rid of his urge a little bit.
I really like how this scene was shot too, 'cause he's sitting out on like a patio outside. And then the camera's like outside on the street, looking in on him like through the lattice work, and there's like vines and stuff coming up. You can't see like his whole body or his whole face. You can just see like little bits and pieces of it here and there. I just thought it was a cool way to shoot this scene.
So the cops, they figure out, or he mentions to Loman the Ariston cigarettes that he found, and Ariston's like kind of throws it off at first. He's like, well, why do I care about cigarettes? And then he's like thinking, he's like, Ariston sounds familiar, and he goes and looks at an old murder case, and I think they found Ariston cigarettes there or something like that.
Yeah, three cigarette butts at the crime scene of the one of the girls.
And so Hans is still walking around the town, and then it cuts to the balloon seller guy, the blind guy, and he hears his whistling, and immediately he like perks up, and he thinks back to whenever Elsie was taken, he sold Hans the balloon, and Hans was whistling at the time when he bought the balloons. So the balloon maker, he yells for another like friend or boy who sells papers or something like that. And he tells the boy, like, do you hear that guy whistling? And he's like, oh, he's over there. He's talking to a girl and taking her down like an alley. And the balloon guy is like, I think he's the murderer because I heard him whistling when he was with Elsie. So the little boy, well, he's like a teenager probably, runs, tries to find them. He sees them in like this underground store, like candy store, and Hans is buying this girl candy. And the boy like hides behind like some barrels or something like that, and Hans comes out. And I love this scene too, because like gives the girl candy, and then he like slowly puts his hand in his pocket, and then slowly comes up and takes a knife out, and then the kid is like on edge, but then Hans just cuts like a piece of fruit or something like that.
Yeah, he starts peeling an orange with it.
And then the kid, I'm guessing this is like the iconic part from the movie, because the kid grabs some chalk or something and writes M on his hand. And it goes up to Hans and like, I don't know, doesn't like tackle him, but like he kind of like runs into him and like hits his back. Cause like the kid see he has a blade, so he doesn't want to like, get involved, so he kind of just marks him. I thought that was so smart.
It was very smart, but also shows how stupid Hans is because, like, later on he finds out that the M's there, and this is how all the beggars are tracking him through the city. Take the fucking coat off, man. Pretty easy fix.
So yeah, they Loman and the other cop, they go to Fonz's apartment. they notice the window ledge. So Loman is like, Wolfie's right on here. They look and there's like scratch marks in it. They open like the window and they see red pencil shavings. So you pretty much know that Hans is the killer at this point. So now at the point of the movie, Hans is basically running away from all of the I guess the criminals, right? He runs into like this kind of office area building. He ends up getting away. He runs into the building, and then the three guys who are chasing after him, they tell their bosses that Hans is definitely in this building. There's like a bank in there, and then just a bunch of offices. And so Codebreaker, he decides that they're gonna wait 3 hours to go into this building because everyone will be gone, right, from work. So they get there. Yeah, Hans is like hiding in the attic in the storage, and there's like three or four watchmen that are there. So one of the criminals, he knocks out the one of the cops, or he shows up as an undercover cop. So he gets into the building. Two watchmen are on the rounds. There's like these special time clocks where they have to like put a key in or something like that, and like if they don't do it in time, then it calls the police station basically.
I don't know if that's an actual thing back then, but that's pretty
Yeah,
fucking advanced, I would think.
it is.
Like,
Yeah,
you're
yeah,
like, you know something's wrong if these guys didn't clock in properly.
yeah, yeah. Exactly. And I gotta say that these criminals are doing a hell of a lot of work to find this guy.
More than they need to be, that's for damn sure.
Like they're fucking drilling holes in doors. They're like bringing a fucking drill to drill through the concrete because they don't want him to like go through the main door. And he's like, if it's going like the office door, then like Codebreaker's like, well, don't go in the door. You'll make a lot of noise. He's like going through the ceiling. And I thought maybe it was just like, I guess like drop ceiling. They probably didn't have that back then, I guess. But it's like a fucking like 12-inch thick concrete. He's out there with the fucking drill. Oh, fuck. So yeah, Hans is in the attic. He's hiding out up there. One of the watchmen before he got knocked out, like locked the door from the outside so Hans can't get out. So he's up there behind the door. He's like banging on this nail to try and like make it curve to pick the lock. And one of the guys hear some banging, so he runs all the way down the stairs, like three floors, to tell the main guy. And it's like, why not tell the guys on the way down, like, hey, go up to the attic? I think Hans is up there. Like, he waits until he's at the very bottom to tell his boss. So they get up into the attic and they're searching, and then the watchman in the main office downstairs, he reaches up and grabs like a rope that calls the cops. So the cops have like some paperwork to like find out, like it's not Morse code, but it's like these codes that's like specific to like this alarm or something like that. And they figure out where it is. So they have 5 minutes to criminals have 5 minutes to get out of there basically. So they're about to leave, but then the main boss tells them, like, we got 5 minutes, let's just search through all these doors in the attic.
Units.
Yeah. So they do end up finding Hans, and they get him out of there, but all the cops come, and then we see in the hole the guy's still down there. They fucking took the rope from the guy, so he's, I think his name is Franz. He's stuck in the hole, so he gets taken by the cops, obviously. They think that like they were after the bank, but they don't really know that the criminals were after Hans at this point. Franz ends up getting turned over to Lohman, and Lohman didn't know why they were there, but he finds out that they're looking for the child murderer. And Lohman asks the guy, like, where would they be keeping Hans? And so he tells Lohman that like there is some building that got abandoned during the Great Depression, and that's where they are holding Hans at. And we get to the final scene in the movie. I really like this scene, especially like whenever they bring Hans down into like this room and it's just like a couple guys. You think it's a couple of guys. Hans is like, "Let me the fuck out of here," and then he turns around and it's like all of like the criminal underground people and all like the mothers.
Yeah, there's like a fucking 500 people down there.
And they see like the four main like leaders like at the table.
Yeah.
And then he like moves over to like this area and he looks at of some guy and guy's like, "Yeah, you don't want to hate me. I'm on your side. I'm your defense lawyer." It's like, what?
He basically tells them to like, I don't even know why I'm here, because there's no way that we're gonna be able to change their minds or something like that.
The blind man is there too. And we get into the monologue, like you briefly mentioned earlier. Hans is saying that all of these criminals, they have a choice for what they do because, excuse me, they have no job. They probably didn't do well in school, so they have to do things to get by and make money. But Hans has no choice, or he's struggling with it because, like he says, like he gets in this state where like he has to kill. If he doesn't, then like he's not going to be happy. He's gonna have these voices in his head, and when he does kill, he doesn't remember any of it happening.
I have the whole quote here. Like, it's
Okay.
pretty fucking long, but
Yeah, sure, yeah.
so he yells out, "I can't help what I do, I can't help it." And someone says the old story, we never can help it in court. And Han says, "What do you know about it? Who are you anyway? Criminals, are you proud of yourselves? Proud of breaking safes or cheating at cards? Things you could just as well keep your fingers off. You wouldn't need to do all that if you'd learned a proper trade or if you'd work, if you weren't such a bunch of lazy bastards. But I can't help myself. I have no control over this evil thing inside of me, the fire, the voices, the torment." And someone says, "Do you mean to say that you have to murder?" And Hans replies, "It's there all the time, driving me out to wander the streets, following me silently, but I can feel it there. It's me pursuing myself. I want to escape from myself, but it's impossible. I can't escape. I have to obey it. I have to run endless streets. I want to escape to get away. And I'm pursued by ghosts, ghosts of mothers and of those children. They never leave me. They are always there, always, 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 except when I do it. Then I can't remember anything. And afterwards, I see those posters and read what I've done. And read and read. Did I do that? But I can't remember anything about it. But who will believe me? Who knows what it's like to be me? How I'm forced to act, how I must, don't want to, but must. Don't want to, but must." And then a voice screams, "I can't bear to hear it. I can't go on. I can't, I can't." That dialogue, dude, and the way that Peter Lorre acts it out is so intense, man. So intense. And for 1931, where mental health wasn't even a thing, for that to be in this movie, it's fucking nuts, dude. And just like, what I watched this movie twice. And on the second playthrough, that monologue just like completely changed everything for me in this movie.
Really?
Because I was just like on a second watch, you pick up on things that you may have missed in the first time. And then this just fucking wrapped it all up. And you realize like all the mental health aspects that are throughout this movie where he can't help what he's doing. And it's fucking crazy, man. Like this movie is so far ahead of its time.
And we get the defense lawyer who is saying like you can't just kill this guy. Like
Yeah.
you're not the law, not the proper law, and like he just needs to be sent away. Right. And then the main boss basically says, like, okay, yeah, we sent him away to get help. He gets released or escapes. He kills again. Then we do this thing over and over again, and he's like, when's it gonna end? And then a couple of the mothers pop up and they're like, to the defense lawyer, like, do you have children? And they're like, probably not. Like, do you know what it is like when your child is missing for those, 2 or 3 days? You don't know what is going on with them, where they're at, how they're doing. And then when you find out that they're dead, the grief that you have to go through, like, you don't understand, like, he deserves death, right?
And like the way that it's portrayed in the movie, like you can almost see both sides of the argument. Like, yeah, okay, he can't help it, but to put him away in an insane asylum, there's always that risk of him getting reformed in quotations for those who can't see me, and then being released back out. And like this has already happened in this movie, not in the movie, but in this story, right? Because he was already in an insane asylum. And he got released. So obviously people are going to be screaming for his head, but at the same time, like there's a law that needs to be abided. And I like the way that his defense lawyer says, like, nobody has the right to kill somebody. So like if they do this to him, then they're no better than him, basically.
So all the criminals and stuff, they're all yelling like, kill him, and then you kind of hear this ruckus, and then everyone just starts putting their hands up. And then you see Hans, put his hands up. And then the movie cuts to, I'm guessing, some judges that are about to read a case. And then you see the mothers from the beginning of the dead children. I don't, does Frau say something at the end here?
Yeah, she does. Let's see if it's here. She just says this won't bring back our children.
Oh, okay.
But then
Yeah.
she kind of like breaks the fourth wall too, as like kind of staring directly at the camera. Sorry, you were gonna say something.
Don't know how I liked about it just abruptly ending like that, but I guess it leaves it up for interpretation, right?
Yeah.
Of what happened to Hans.
So what do you think happened?
I don't know. Yeah. Probably killed him, I'm guessing. So I don't know, like, what the laws were at that time in Germany, I guess, right? For like death penalty and stuff like that. I don't know, like, if the death penalty was a thing,
Yeah.
all that. So,
I'm sure they had hangings and stuff like that still.
I mean, he probably did get executed, right? Because he killed, like, probably what, how many kids? I just doesn't say, but
I think it was eight, six or eight.
yeah, that's a lot, man.
Yeah, over the span of a year? Fuck yeah.
Yeah, so. What about
Yeah.
you?
I think they probably gave him the death sentence, execution style. Because like for her to say this won't bring back our children, I feel like that kind of solidifies it that like he's not there anymore, but it's not going to change anything. Like our kids are still gone.
Yeah, that's fair. Cool. All right. Well, anything else you want to mention?
Not so much about the movie, but I will say that I changed my score throughout our discussion.
Okay. After your first watch, what would have been your score?
Like a two?
Out of five?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I wasn't in the right frame of mind. I wasn't feeling it. I was bored throughout it. And I felt like I couldn't focus on it. And then, ironically enough, Sarah and I went to the spa yesterday and I rewatched it last night and I was like nice and relaxed, just chilling on the couch. I put my phone upside down so I couldn't see it and I just focused on the movie and that totally changed my perspective on it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's the way the black and white blood splatters.
All right. How did you rate this movie?
Story, I'll give it a 9 out of 10. I just think, like, honestly, I could probably give it a 10 out of 10 just because, like we said throughout this whole discussion, like, this movie so ahead of its time. We get all of the classic horror tropes, even like the characters I like you don't really know their names that well, but like Hans as a character is fantastic. All these little side characters kind of working together, like the blind man. He's the one that pretty much not found the guy, but like
Solved the case.
solved the case, like him and the kid, right? Yeah, so I'll go 9 out of 10, and then quality, I'll go 9 out of 10 as well. Just like, man, like, not to like say it again, but like this movie is so ahead of its time with all the editing, the cuts, the lighting work was done really well. The acting, I thought Peter Lorre was like fantastic. Yeah, man, this movie is really good. So 9 out of 10 for both.
All right. And that's what I changed both my scores
All
to.
righty, nice.
So both of mine are 9 out of 10 as well. I don't know. I can mirror everything that you've said, and I've already talked a lot about it. But yeah, I mean, this movie, like on my first watch, I was just like, I'm missing something because I don't see what everybody's talking about. Like everybody's in the reviews that I've seen, it's like this movie's revolutionary, like it was ahead of its time, and it's like fucking a perfect movie, it's a masterpiece, blah blah blah. And I was just like, I don't see it. If any of our listeners watch this movie for the first time and they have those feelings, watch it again.
Yeah.
Because this movie, I think on a third watch, could probably be a 10 out of 10 for both for me. There's just certain things that you pick up on. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of different people that you kind of get lost in it all a little bit. But then, like on a second watch, on a third watch, you're going to start recognizing these characters and figuring out like who they work for, what they're doing, what their role is in this movie. And it just makes it a whole different experience. And yeah, Peter Lorre, man, the way that this dude acts, holy shit. Like you don't see him a lot. Like he's really. He probably has the least screen time out of anybody in the movie, but he captures everything about the serial killer that you need to see like on screen. Like I think he did such an amazing job.
Because like, oh, sorry, because
No, go.
like before he has to kill when he's just regular Hans and he's hiding from these people. He is so fucking scared, man. Like, he doesn't know what to do. Like, he kind of doesn't know why they're after him in a sense, right?
Yeah, because he doesn't remember what he's done, right? Like, yeah. He's just like a little wet puppy dog get caught out in the rain kind of thing. Just a serial killing one. But like, yeah, the quality, like I said, I also gave it a 9 out of 10. There's just like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that they do in this movie with the camera work and like how we talked about how like it still has pieces of like the silent film era, and they kind of mix it in with the spoken dialogue and whatnot. I just think they did a really good job with all that. Some of the camera shots, like that one that zooms in through the window, and like you can see like it's a shaky camera, like and you can see it's like shaking around whenever it comes in, and then like right before it gets to the glass, you can see like something slides across, so like the window slides open or something like that. But like they were experimenting with things in early film, and I think they did a really good job at the stuff that they were able to do with the very antique type filming equipment. So yeah, 9 out of 10 for both for me as well. All right, you guys know our scores. We'll head on over to Rotten Tomatoes and see what they scored it. The critics' consensus: a landmark psychological thriller with arresting images, deep thoughts on modern society, and Peter Lorre in his finest performance. What do you think the critics scored it?
I know this is highly rated because it's on the IMDb top 250, but I'll go with like 92.
So not only is this our oldest movie, it's also our only 100% on
Oh,
Rotten Tomatoes.
shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. 100%
What?
on 64 ratings and an average score of 9.2 out of 10.
Wow.
The audience score is a 95% on 25,000 ratings at an average score of 4.5 out of 5 or a 9 out of 10.
Jeez, man.
Even IMDb has it at like an 8.2.
Yeah.
And they are tough critics.
Yeah.
So
Wow.
this is our highest rated movie that we've ever done.
Yeah.
So good pick.
I guess so, yeah. Fuck.
What's Letterboxd got?
So Letterboxd has a 4.3 out of 5. I gave it a 4.5, and I see that you also changed it to a 4.5.
Yeah, I originally had it at a 4, bumped it up.
Anthony here be monster gave it a 5. And I am shocked at this.
Okay.
Nathan from I Hope You Suffer gave it a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Jensen gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Yep.
Nice. Highly, highly rated movie. All right, you ready for the scare section?
Yes, sir.
What did you give it for a scare rating?
I'll give it a 2 out of 10. It's like overly scary, I think, mostly just because it has so many of like the horror tropes that we've seen in psychological thrillers, to this day. Creepy, there's kids being killed, which is never a good thing. So, 2 out of 10.
Okay.
Scariest scene? I said that fucking balloon, man. That thing is terrifying. And then would I survive? I'll say yes because, Hans, he likes to kill children, little girls. Don't know, I feel like that could probably take him on, honestly. So,
Yeah.
yeah. How would you?
All right. My scare rating, I give it a 3 out of 10. So the
All
movie
right.
itself isn't scary, but the thought of what Hans does and knowing that there's people in the world that do this kind of thing is scary. It's also a bit disturbing how things panned out with the manhunt and capturing of Hans. It took them over a year to finally track down the man responsible for killing children. And just like the thought of him going away to a mental institution and then being like reformed, scary thought. Because it does happen. Scariest scene. I said that scene at the end where Hans is talking to the underground court that he couldn't help it. Like, it's not a scary scene per se, but it was scary how he was able to convince the defense lawyer that he couldn't help what he does. And like how often this is a case in real life where people like this can get away with what they do. Would I survive? I said the opposite of my response from Anton, abso-fucking-lutely. This guy is a little bug-eyed, chubby pansy that preys on small people, small children who can't defend themselves. When he was faced with a team of adults, he cowered and hid. Fucking knock him down. All right. We mentioned earlier this is part two of our villain face-off. So part one was Anton from No Country for Old Men. Part two is Hans. Last name, Beckert. Hans Beckert from this movie. A little recap. So Anton's strength was a 16.5. Dexterity was a 16. Constitution was a 22.5. Intelligence was a 21. Wisdom was a 23.5. And charisma was a 9. Let you go first.
Alrighty. Now, before people bash me for picking this guy as a opponent, most of the people who I would pick, we've already done episodes on their movie.
That's
So,
fair.
yeah. So for strength, I went a 5 out of 30. Even just by his looks, like, doesn't look that strong. I feel like I could take him. So, go 5 out of 30. Dexterity, I went a 12 out of 30. I mean, he does like sneak around fairly well around the city, and like he is gone for like a year. Like they don't catch him for like a year, and he does like sneak around that like building pretty well and stuff like that. So 12 out of 30. Constitution kind of set kept around the same, what, 10 out of 30?
Okay.
Just, doesn't run or anything like that, but I don't know. Wanted to give them some points,
Yep.
Intelligence went 17 out of 30.
Okay.
He's not the smartest guy, but he also did evade people for like a year. And, he did, because like he goes back to like a candy shop, right? And it's like, if I was that candy shop owner and there's all these murders of kids happening, like some guy is selling or buying candy for this little girl, like, I don't know. Wisdom 15 out of 30. He does use his like 8 months of knowledge of killing these girls to his advantage of how he can get around and lure these children and stuff like that. So 15 out of 30. And charisma went to 5 out of 30 as well. Not the most charismatic guy, although his last speech kind of did bring that out of him. So yeah, not the best villain we've ever done in this, but
Well, it was a good movie, so
yeah.
we'll give you that. Right. For mine, my strength, I gave him a 4.
Okay.
I said he preys on children who are weaker than him and can't defend themselves. He didn't fight the mob of adults whatsoever when he was caught. Excuse me. Dexterity, I give him a 20.
Okay.
I said he eluded police in the public eye for over a year while committing his crimes. And even when they had him trapped in the attic, it took them like a lot longer than they needed to find him. He did a really good job at like hiding in plain sight. Constitution, I gave him an 8. I said we've really only seen one instance of this being in play during the movie, when he's getting chased through the streets by the underground mob. He's winded, stops often, kind of leans up against a wall to hide. I don't think he has the greatest stamina, and his little legs aren't meant for running. Intelligence, I gave him an 18, and this kind of falls into play with his dexterity. Like the time it took him to get caught plays a part here. Wisdom, I give him a 16. I said he got too cocky in the end and left too many clues, but I do think that this was all part of his plan. If his end monologue is true, he didn't want to kill and he wanted to eventually get caught. So I think this was his way of stopping the killings. Charisma, I gave him a 10. I said he was able to trick children, which isn't very hard, but his end monologue was able to sway the defense lawyer and really helped with his plea of insanity. Although the ending is left open for interpretation, so we don't really know. So that means his strength was a 4.5. His dexterity was a 16. His constitution was a 9. His intelligence was a 17.5. His wisdom was a 15.5. And his charisma was a 7.5. So he lost every category except dexterity, where he tied Anton.
No way.
So he lost by a score of 5-0-1. And Anton is our villain face-off winner.
Yeah, figured.
To no surprise at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not a great villain to match up with Anton, but this movie is phenomenal. Regardless of the outcome of this villain face-off, I loved talking about this movie. I loved watching this movie, and I'm really glad that we found a way to do it and finally watch it. So
Cool.
kudos to you for this pick.
I got you, man.
All right, so we're doing things a little bit differently. This week was supposed to be an episode of Fury Road for us, but I kind of realized that scheduling for our month of March would have been like kind of off kilter if we kept up with our regularly scheduled stuff. But March is our birthday month, so we're both kind of picking, I don't know, a little bit different things. So, do you want to explain what your pick of March is going to be? Do you
Yes.
remember what your pick of March is?
Yeah, is it the first one that we talked about?
One that you wanted to do.
Okay. So we will be doing, I believe, if I'm correct, the first season of Black Mirror.
There you go.
Yes.
So yeah, that season only has three episodes, so it's a quick one to kind of get through and hopefully be able to do a decent episode on. So yeah, and then I'll explain my pick after that episode.
Yep.
But yeah, that'll be coming up first week of March. Well, we're in the first week of March. I guess next week it'll be coming
Yeah.
out.
Cool.
Anyways, we'll wrap it up. Getting a little late. If you guys want to catch us on social media, you can find us at a podcast on Elm Street on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. If you click the link in our bio on Instagram, you'll find links to our TeePublic account where we have our merch, a link to our Patreon account if you wish to support the podcast that way, and a link to each of our individual Letterboxd accounts, our Discord server, and anywhere that you can listen to us. Thanks for listening.
Alrighty. Talk to you guys later.
See you later.